Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm Eddie Garcia. This week's show is a musical map from Portugal to Tennessee to North Carolina, Winston-Salem to be exact. Doug Davis has a new CD called Where the Lilies Bloom coming out next week, and we have a live studio performance and interview on today's show. Mandolin virtuoso Sierra Hull hails from Tennessee, and she's bringing her lightning legato to Greensboro as part of Land Jam. She's here today in conversation with David Ford. Now, Land Jam's the Piedmont Land Conservancy's annual bluegrass throwdown. PLC development director Greg Keener stops by his old stomping grounds, WFDD, to explain the impactful work that they do. But today's show kicks off across the sea in Portugal. Fado is a traditional form of music that's making a modern and international impact thanks to our guest, Marisa. She's heading to Winston-Salem this week as part of the Seacrest Artist Series. It's an hour of music and conversation coming your way right after this news. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm Eddie Garcia. Later in the show, we have modern mandolin shredder Sierra Hull. She's playing Land Jam in Greensboro this weekend. The concert's put on by Piedmont Land Conservancy, and development director Greg Keener is here to tell us all about their conservation efforts. On the back end of the show, it's a little live music with Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. Doug has a new CD coming out, so we're going to dip back in time to his 2013 studio session, an interview with David Ford. But first, Bethany Chafin is here with a musical guest from Portugal who's bringing her distinct and celebrated music to Winston-Salem.
Marisa has performed on the world's most prestigious stages, London's Royal Festival Hall, the Frankfurt Opera, Carnegie Hall, Paris's Théâtre de la Ville, and on Thursday, October 22nd, she'll bring her soulful renditions of Fado to Waite Chapel on the campus of Wake Forest University. Fado is the traditional music of Portugal, and it dates back to the 1820s. Marisa is one of the world's premier Fado performers. Many attribute the genre's resurgence to her captivating voice. She's a multiple Grammy nominee and winner of BBC Radio 3's award for Best European Artist in World Music. Marisa's performance on October 22nd marks the beginning of her North American tour promoting her new album, Mundo. Marisa spoke with me by phone from Portugal, and I began by asking her to define Fado.
Puedo decir que está vacía cada una de estas calles. Puedo decir que veo gente y sin embargo no veo a nadie.
Well, Fado is a music who was born by the triangle of Brazil, Portugal, and Africa, and appeared here in Lisboa at the 19th century. It's a urban music, and it's a music who explores the feelings of life. We sing about love, lost love, jealousy, melancholy, sweetness, happiness, death. Saudade is a Portuguese word, who I think in English is a kind of longing. It's very close to blues, you know. Sometimes I have some journalists who call the Portuguese blues. And it's a music who have, we play it with acoustic instruments. We have a special instrument to play Fado with the Portuguese guitar. With the guitar, we have a shape like a small heart. The sound is a little bit like tears. It's beautiful, it's beautiful. But some people also say that Fado comes from the sailors, because Lisboa, it's a city with near of the sea. It's a port city, so they say come from the sailors, from the sea, from the stars. It's more magical like these, huh?
It's very magical and beautiful. Well, I understand that you've been singing since you were a young girl, and you were born in Mozambique and you were raised in Lisbon. Mm-hmm. And could you give me a little bit of your personal narrative?
Well, I was born in Mozambique. My mom, she's from Mozambique, and my father's Portuguese. We moved to Lisboa. I moved with my parents to Lisboa at the age of 3. We moved to a very traditional neighborhood here in the center of Lisboa, where Fado was born in there at the 19th century. I started listening to Fado very, very early in my life. And my parents, they rent in Moreria, that's the name of my neighborhood, a little taverna. And they start making fado at the weekends. For people who doesn't know about fado, fado is a music we sing on the streets. It's an oral tradition. The tradition is passed by the old ones to the youngest ones. And they sing on the streets. You could walk in the tiny streets of the neighborhoods and listen fado from the windows. People put records. We don't have very high buildings. The houses are very small, you know, not so high. We play on the streets. So it was, for me, was kind of a, fado was a kind of a toy. I don't remember really my first toy, but I remember how I sing my first fado. And in my parents' taverna, they start making fado at the weekends. People used to go there and sing. And I start listening, and I start asking my father to sing also. And I start singing. With 5 years old, I start singing fado.
Well, you mentioned that maybe it was one of your first toys, and but fado music can be very sad and have a sense of longing, but can there also be a sense of joy and beauty in it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. Explores the feelings of life, and we don't pass all time always in a melancholic mood or in a sad mood. Actually, Portuguese people, we have a sweet melancholy, you know. And we don't pass all the time in that sweet melancholy. We have all the same feelings as you to explore, you know. Mm-hmm. So we explore everything as fado. So we have happy fados, we have up-tempo fados, we have melancholic fados, everything.
Puedo subirme a los tejados donde solo vive el viento. Puedo describirte en el colmado de mi mente donde fado cantan los viejos. Y ahora que mi tiempo ya se acaba, no puedo explicar por qué te has ido. No puedo decir tu nombre sin escalofríos.
Do you have something that you feel that you bring to this tradition that has been passed on for so many generations? What do you feel that your voice brings to the practice of fado?
Well, I don't know, because it's, I can't see a concert of mine. It's impossible. I would love to, but it's impossible to be seated and see what people see. Even if I see a DVD, it's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know, because I do what I really feel in my, with my music. And I'm very sincere. I'm very transparent. And I think with this type of music, it is a music who comes from the roots. If you're not sincere and pure, it's not going to work. You know, it's going to be something cold and mathematic. And that is not going to be good in this type of music. Mm-hmm. So if you ask me what I bring, I really don't know. I just know that in this type of music, I'm just me. I know I'm a little bit different. Maybe because I have this African roots in my back. But I think that question you should make to people who comes to my concert and they see it. It's difficult for me to speak about it. I don't know.
Certainly you've taken this music to stages around the world, and I wonder, does it feel different when you play at home for maybe a small crowd versus when you play at some of the world's most famous locations for song?
Oh no, I love both, and I do both with lots of joy. And it's so good when I see an audience who doesn't speak my language trying to understand my music and my culture and me as an artist. It's amazing. But also it's fantastic when I'm in here in my country at my home, and I try to sing to my people who understand me so well. And it's like recharging batteries. So both places are amazing to sing.
Who were some of your musical inspirations?
Oh, so many. I love music, different types of music. So if you ask me about a type, maybe I can tell you one of my inspirations.
Sure. Well, I've read that you grew up singing many types of music, you know, gospel and soul and jazz. So what about maybe jazz? Any jazz influences?
Oh, I love Ella Fitzgerald. I love Nina Simone, Dizzy Gillespie. Somehow I have so many in my mind.
Há caminho inseguro, uma espécie de muro, degrau sobre os dois. Uma energia constante, rodopio da manta à espera de ser dois. Uma carta que se atrasa, cigarro brasa, a cinza no chão. Desvendar de segredo e a mão quase a medo a pegar-te na mão.
Well, I understand that you have a new album that will be released on October 9th. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, it passed 5 years from the last album. I didn't record an album in 5 years. And I decided to record it. An album will, in some way, it's like showing my world. It's more intimate. It's more me. It's I'm trying to show, to invite people to try to understand me, my feelings, my music. What is my mood now?
Um verso que se conjuga, verbo e a fuga por dentro de mim. Vou pôr minhas mãos no fogo, arriscar-me no jogo e dizer-te que sim.
Well, I wonder, will you be accompanied by anyone at your performance for the Seacrest series? And if so, who are those individuals?
Well, I will bring my traditional combo with the Portuguese guitar, the acoustic guitar and the bass. And I bring also percussion. That's how we make music. We don't need more than that.
Wonderful. I want to thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Um verso que se conjuga, verbo e a fuga por dentro de mim. Vou pôr minhas mãos no fogo, arriscar-me no jogo e dizer-te que sim. Como é que eu
hei? Fado performer Marisa. You can hear her in concert Thursday, October 22nd in Waite Chapel. The evening's performance is part of Wake Forest University's Seacrest Artist Series. The event begins at 7:30, and there will be a pre-performance talk by Dr. Vera Castro in the Waite Chapel Balcony Room beginning at 6:40. For ticket information and more, visit our website at wfdd.org, and once you're there, click on Triad Arts Weekend.
Triad Arts Associate Producer Bethany Chafin. After the break, it's Octave Mandolin, Land Conservation, and Live Music. I'm Eddie Garcia. This is Triad Arts Weekend. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm Eddie Garcia. The Piedmont Land Conservancy is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. For the past 7 years, they've thrown a big bluegrass concert to raise awareness of their work and have a good music-filled time. This year's headliner is David Grisman, and the support act is today's guest, Sierra Hull.
The Queen of Hearts is the Ace of Sorrow.
Sierra Hull has been playing the mandolin since she was a young child. Her dedication and nimbleness on the instrument has led her to play the Grand Ole Opry and the White House. She has a new album on the way, and you can see her play some of the songs from it on October 16th at 8 p.m. at the Carolina Theater in Greensboro. She spoke with Triad Arts executive producer David Ford.
What shall I do?
Always around music, just from, you know, as far back as I can remember, mostly because I grew up in church and hearing, you know, people singing old hymns, and, you know, my mom has a beautiful voice and, you know, would sing songs, and I remember sitting in her lap when I was probably like 3 years old and her teaching me my first song, and my dad was always a big just fan of music, everything from 80s rock to, you know, to bluegrass. And he always wanted a mandolin as a kid, but never had the chance to actually get one. And whenever he married my mom, they moved to Byrdstown, Tennessee, and lived right next to my great-uncle and great-aunt. And my great-uncle had a mandolin and guitar and a fiddle, and he was self-taught and played a little bit and, you know, never really played in a band or out anywhere. He just sat around in his house, and every time you go in the living room, you know, he'd just be in there, like, you know, playing around on the fiddle, playing tunes. And so he loaned my dad a guitar, and my dad started learning some chords. And so I have an older brother as well, and so we just grew up singing, and then my dad learned to play guitar a little bit while we would sing. And then he finally saved up some money and bought a mandolin, and it was really around that time that he was trying to teach my mom some guitar chords so she could play with him, and then trying to get my brother interested. And I just decided, hey, I want in on this. I want to play too. And so I thought I wanted to play the fiddle just because that was like an instrument that they didn't have, and seemed like, oh, well, my brother's kind of trying to learn the banjo a little bit. So I don't even remember why fiddle seemed like the thing. And I got one for Christmas. My granny and my great aunt and great uncle that I was referring to, they went in together and bought me a fiddle, but it was a full size, you know. And when you're a little kid, a lot of times they'll start you out on a half size or a three quarter, you know, something much smaller. And it was really just a little too big for me to be able to handle at that age, because I was pretty small. And, you know, I think to save my disappointment, my dad said, well, you know, the mandolin's tuned just like the fiddle, but, you know, it's G, D, A, E, the same tuning. So, of course, it's different, but I could go ahead and show you a little something that I've learned on the mandolin. And then when you get a fiddle, at least maybe you'll know a tune or something. That's really how I wound up with a mandolin in my hands. And from that point, I just kind of fell in love with it. And that became the instrument that I stuck with.
Well, you are an incredibly fast picker on the mandolin, in addition to being very musical the way you play. We live in an area here where, I mean, as you know, there's some outstanding pickers on just about every bluegrass or Celtic or old-time instrument imaginable just in this area. So sometimes, you know, folks take it for granted, but could you tell me a story or two about what really goes into getting into that kind of playing shape? I mean, for maybe even for the non-musician, just to give us an inkling as to what kind of dedication went into that, you know, during your early years.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, to really become good at anything, you have to really be willing to dedicate yourself to it fully. And I think sometimes the only way to really dedicate yourself to anything is because you're passionate about it and you really love it. And for me, that was the case. I really just loved it early on. I fell in love with the community, and I would go to these local jams on the weekend. There wasn't a lot of festivals, necessarily like big festivals around where I grew up, but there were a few local things that were smaller events, and a lot of local pickers would come out. And so I remember going every Friday and Saturday night from a really young age. When I started playing at 8 years old, so from about 8 to, you know, 10, there was like 2 years at least of a lot of just being around jams every weekend and a lot of local musicians. And so in addition to just learning some of the things, my dad, he was taking a few lessons, and then he would show me some stuff. And then I eventually got some lessons for a while from a really great local musician. But I think just being surrounded by it so much, you know, kind of really immersing myself in it, is like such a great educational experience from just hearing people in the community and people that aren't familiar with bluegrass music too much. I mean, that's a huge part of it. Most of the people in the audience play music themselves, you know, they're musicians, and they go and they jam. I mean, I just came back from IBMA in Raleigh, North Carolina, and, you know, you go there and there's, you know, thousands of people, and I would say, you know, 70% of those people are walking around with their instruments, and every corner you turn, somebody's in a jam session. And that's how you learn. You learn a lot from that. And so, you know, the traditional tunes that everybody knows and jams together over and over and over, you know, for me, it was like learning those fiddle tunes, learning those, you know, that catalog of your kind of standard bluegrass songs that everybody knows, and trying to just emulate what my heroes were doing. And I think, you know, the more you're around it, the more you're going to just learn about the music and eventually learn to speak the language of the music.
That makes so much sense to me. I appreciate you breaking that down for me, Sierra, because I've always been an appreciator of just the facility that so many of my friends in that world have. I know that beyond the festivals and the interactions, you're also woodshedding and practicing on your own, but it's almost like in the classical world, folks go away to like a musical camp or festival for a month or two in the summer, and then they come back from that experience and their level goes way up. But it sounds like you're in that kind of setting. You were in that kind of setting like every week for you know, pretty much year round as a youngster, where you're rubbing elbows with people that are kind of pushing your envelope a little bit.
Absolutely. And when you're first learning to play, I mean, you know, everything's new. So a player at any level can be something, you know, exciting that you can learn from. I mean, even, you know, a local player that maybe, you know, maybe doesn't even know that much, but, you know, could show you a chord or two. I mean, you know, there's so much to be learned from almost everyone you encounter when you're just getting into it. So as a kid, I mean, I was learning stuff left and right just because, you know, from even the local musicians and things. And, you know, from there, it just grew. The more festivals and stuff you go to, the more kinds of musicians you get to be around. And, you know, that was huge for me in learning how to play.
Yeah. I'd be remiss without asking along those lines, in terms of an education, what would you take away from your stage time with Alison Krauss on the upper stage there?
Well, I mean, I first heard Alison's music when I was 9 years old. I'd been playing a year at that point, and I got my first Alison CD, an album called Forget About It, that she did, and I just fell in love with it. It wasn't a bluegrass album by any means. There was very little mandolin on it. I just loved her voice. I loved the sound of that album. And from that, you know, I kind of ended up getting most of her albums that she had recorded at that point. And there was a lot of great mandolin playing on there by a guy named Adam Steffi. And, you know, he became one of my favorite mandolin players and heroes that I learned a lot from. But I think just like getting the chance to play with somebody that their music had meant that much to me. It's hard for people to imagine. 2 years doesn't really seem like that long, but, you know, from 9 to 11, I really became just the biggest fan and just, you know, listen to her music all the time. So to be invited to, you know, play with her at all, let alone somewhere like the Grand Ole Opry, was a really special thing. And, you know, she's continued to be a good friend to me even now, and someone that has allowed me to have some pretty amazing opportunities that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
You mentioned her voice, and that's always been something about her performance that has grabbed me, but you share that in common with her. You've got a gorgeous voice, and I'm wondering how your mandolin playing informs that, or vice versa. There's a natural fluidity to what you do vocally that I just find really appealing.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, yeah, I think, you know, somebody like Alison has certainly been a, you know, a lot of what you take in as a young person ends up being reflected in your music, and then you sort of try to figure out, well, you know, along the way, you know, how to end up sounding like yourself so that you don't just sound like your favorite mandolin player, you don't just sound like the favorite singer. I think it's a constant, you know, growing process of just trying to figure out what exactly feels right for you as you're trying to be your own artist like that. And for me, as a singer, songwriting lately has played a big role in that. I think the more I've been interested in songwriting and feeling like I can write songs about things that feel true to me, that's a big boost vocally in some ways, because it's so much easier to connect on an emotional level with something you really care about singing, you know, rather than just singing something out of the catalog that everybody knows, or maybe even something somebody else has written. And, you know, which is totally fine, because there's plenty of, you know, Alison's a perfect example of somebody that doesn't write her own songs. But she knows exactly what she's looking for in a song. So you don't have to write your own songs to be able to accomplish that, but it's been helpful for me to be able to say, what do I feel like singing about, and what kind of thing would I really want to sing if I could sing anything? And so in recent years, that's been a good discovery of myself, I think, as a singer, and just trying to figure out what feels right, you know.
But don't think I'm gonna bother worrying.
thinking Best Buy might fit the bill for one of those to talk about. You wrote this one. I was listening to a performance you gave from your, I guess it was your 2013 performance with Justin Moses live at the Summer NAMM show breakfast sessions in Nashville. The song itself fits your voice just to a T, and of course you got a nice little mandolin solo there early on. Tell me about that song.
That one's a fun one for sure. That's one, you know, for folks that haven't heard that song, it's kind of a swingy, humorous song in some ways, but I actually got the inspiration for Best Buy, sitting out in front of Best Buy, you know. You can buy me the best, say you love me like the rest. And just kind of built off that as the, you know, the words were quirky enough that to put sort of a more swingy, fun melody with it seemed to make sense. Of course, that was off of an album that came out almost 5 years ago, and I have a new album coming in January, and I think my songwriting since then has definitely evolved as I've gotten older, too. But Best Buy is definitely one of those songs that I can still go back, and it's found its way in my set. Even all these years later, it still stays in the set because it's just a fun one. It's one I really enjoy singing, one that's really fun to play, and, you know, kind of a lighthearted piece, whereas I feel like a lot of what I'm writing these days can be a little darker and not heavy, but can be a little heavy, a little more serious in some ways or intricate. And Best Buy is just one you can let loose on and just have a good time, you know?
Well, I sure had a good time listening to that one. How has your songwriting evolved since tunes like Best Buy?
You know, a lot of them were based on, you know, like I said, Best Buy is kind of a fun, just, you know, a fun song to play, and was kind of written off this imaginative idea of, you know, I'm sitting down in front of the Best Buy store, so I just, like, get the inspiration to kind of write this song. Not that I've necessarily lived or experienced the storyline so much, and I think that was the case with a lot of songs that I'd written before. Is just like, what kind of song would I like to have? And then somewhat trying to expand lyrically upon what kind of storyline would work with the sound of this song. Like, I have this melody, so what kind of lyrics could I write around that? Whereas I feel like a lot of things that I have been writing lately somehow feel a little bit more based upon things that I've really experienced. I feel like certainly the songs that will be coming on this new record feel somewhat like a story of my early 20s, you know, of what that means, the struggles of trying to figure it out. Like, what do I want to do musically? What do I want to have people understand about me? And maybe all the songs, some of them are a little vague. Sometimes people might think that the songs off this album are love songs when they're not. Or maybe they think I'm singing about something else, and it could mean something to me, but somebody else could take something else away from it. So I wouldn't say that they're more vague, but in some ways they could come off a little more vague to different people. So through that, and not that I've lived every storyline on this record either, but I think a lot of it has really been like writing because I had to get it out, you know? And so that's been a different experience for me.
I love my father, I love my mother, I love my sister and my brother, I love my friends and my relatives.
You mentioned that struggle you're going through, and I'm wondering if you could flesh that out for me a little bit. Like, the source of your frustration, could you define it a little bit more? What were you going through?
My whole time that I've traveled since I was about, you know, really the first configuration of a band that I took on the road as Sierra Hall, you know, to play shows with, to perform. It's always been a bluegrass band configuration. So I would have, you know, mandolin, guitar, upright bass, banjo, and fiddle. There's a certain thing that you sometimes wind up doing, taking whatever kind of band situation I had and wanting to maximize what those people within my band had to offer, trying to figure out what that meant as a band, which can be great if what you're wanting to do is have a, you know, a band that everybody's kind of involved. But it was my band, so everybody was looking to me to lead everything. But I was trying to make sure that everybody else had plenty of space. You can almost lose yourself in the sense where you're trying to give everybody else so much room to be their self that you're catering what you do to the people around you rather than really asking yourself the question, what are you on your own? Like, what are you when it's only you? And how do you add to that so that it can be its truest form and have people support that rather than me just thinking that I had to depend on everybody else to make me what I was. And so I think the more that I sort of got out of that, and the new album is produced by Bela Fleck, and it's much different than my other albums in that the whole album is just mandolin, octave mandolin, and bass and voice. So it's really built upon this sparse, you know, bed of just mandolin and voice. Like, what happens if we strip everything away and it's just these songs that I've written and it's just me, and we just, you know, add a little something to that. So we ended up having a little bit of harmony and a little bit of banjo on there as well, but overall it's much more sparse than the other things that I've done, which in some ways makes me feel like it's the truest thing that I've been able to do so far, because it's like if you strip away everything else and you say, you know, what happens if I just have me and it's just these songs that I care about that I've written and that I'm playing and singing, what does that mean, you know? So it's definitely, it was a struggle to get to that point, and it almost took somebody like Bela saying, well, what happens if, let's just hear what it sounds like if it's just you. Oh, that's interesting. And I'm like, what? That can be interesting. You know, but sometimes having all that stuff can almost kind of cloud your view of understanding what you really are. You know, I love playing in a band, and I hope that I will again at some point. But right now it's been really refreshing to just strip everything away and, you know, be touring in more of a stripped-down situation, playing these songs that are mostly bare bones, you know.
That makes so much sense. It's interesting that when we heard Bela last year, it was just, it was him and Abigail. So they've stripped it down to just the two of them, and they put on a great show.
Yeah, no, it's really great, and I think part of that was probably the inspiration of Bela, you know, because he's played in so many wonderful duo situations with people like Edgar Meyer or Chick Corea, you know, or very different kind of duo situations, but, you know, there's so much room to discover what you're really all about when you strip things down, and so he was actually excited about the idea of me making an album that was truly a solo album, just mandolin and voice. But I kind of was like, oh, it would sort of be nice to have one other instrument, you know, because I'm totally going from playing in a band situation to just myself, you know. I love the community of being able to have other people to play with. And so, you know, we found a really great bass player to work with, a guy named Ethan Yojevitz, and Justin Moses, a guy that's played a lot of music with me for many years now, multi-instrumentalist. So, you know, we're still able to do some of the bluegrass things that we had done before in more of a band situation, but also it just opens up some new possibilities to be able to do the bluegrass songs and some of the new songs and not feel somewhat so boxed into whatever I was doing at 15, you know, feeling like I had to do that same thing that I've been doing since I was like 15. And it definitely has given me a little bit more breathing room and freedom, which is really refreshing, and it just took a while to find that, for sure.
All right. Well, Sierra, thank you so much for talking with us tonight.
Thank you, guys. I'm glad it worked out.
Never mind, I'll find someone like you. I wish nothing but the best for you too. Don't forget me.
Sierra Hull, She's playing this year's Land Jam on October 16th at 8 p.m. at the Carolina Theater in Greensboro. You can visit WFDD.org and click on Try It Arts Weekend for more info and tickets. She's the first act on the bill for this year's Land Jam. Land Jam is the Piedmont Land Conservancy's annual celebration of music and land. Development Director Greg Keener spoke with David Ford about the work that PLC does and about the concert. A quick note, longtime listeners may recognize Greg's voice as he's a former employee of WFDD.
You know, when I first started, I asked, you know, a ton of questions about how all this works. And, you know, I kept looking for like the one answer of how we do it, right? And I quickly found out there isn't one answer in how we do it. Each of those projects is different. You know, most of what we do is with what we call willing landowners, you know, people that have a piece of property that they own that they want to see protected. You know, that could be a family farmer who's had this farm for generations, and maybe the kids want to farm, maybe they don't, but they want that piece of land to stay farmland. So we work with them to put the conservation easement on it. They keep their land, they keep doing what they're doing. But no matter what happens, if that property changes hands, it's going to stay a farmland. It could be that. It could be someone that has a tract of land they want to donate and see turned into a nature preserve. It could be any number of things. We've worked with state parks to kind of expand footprints. We've worked with city parks to set up urban greenways. Each one's different, but each one is the result of some kind of partnership between PLC and another organization or landowner.
Okay. And you use that big word, conservation easement, or I guess two words. What exactly is conservation easement, Greg?
Yeah, I'll give you my best non-lawyer answer. I don't know. The analogy I've kind of used in my own head is it's not terribly, I guess, dissimilar to a historic landmark on a building. It's a legal agreement that goes with a piece of property that says this property contains a conservation easement. It can only be used in the following ways. Again, back to everyone's different. Whatever the conservation goal is, that's what's written into that agreement. So it could be it has to remain farmland, or it could be it can only be subdivided X number of times, or it needs to ensure water access for fishing or kayaking, or needs to have this much of a buffer to keep clean water insured. Each one's a little different, but it's, I guess the short version is the legal agreement that stays with a piece of property. And what's great then is the landowner can keep using the property. You know, they keep it, they keep doing what they do. We monitor, get by there once or twice a year just to make sure everything's working like it should. So it allows people to keep land the way they want it and keep using it.
When we're talking about the collaboration that's involved and effectively protecting the lands around us that we all love, what break down that collaboration. Maybe you could give us a specific example of someone you're approaching and how it all spills out.
Well, one of the stories we love to tell about a project that just kind of came to us and worked out really for the benefit of a lot of people was the Knight Brown Nature Preserve. It's on my mind, actually, because I just came to this interview from Knight Brown. We had over 100 eighth graders there for a field trip. So we've been getting them in the water and looking at clean water and hiking and looking at salamanders and all that kind of stuff. It's this beautiful nature preserve in Rockingham County that the land was inherited by someone who lived in California, and she had never seen it. It just came to her through inheritance. And so she got online and found Piedmont Land Conservancy and approached us. And she said, you know, I just don't want to see this nature preserve, this, you know, this beautiful area turned into another house or a development. I'd love it to be a place where people can get out and enjoy it, because I understand it's just gorgeous. We thought that was a great idea. So this is an example of a piece of property that now we own and manage, and it's open to the public. And it's nestled in this neighborhood out in Rockingham County. You wouldn't really know it was there if you didn't see the sign or you weren't looking for it. It's at the end of a cul-de-sac in a neighborhood, but it's this beautiful wooded hiking trails and streams, and there's these beautiful handmade benches that we've put in there. Just, you know, a great example of someone who just cared enough about this piece of property, someone who didn't even live here, that wanted to see it enjoyed by as many people. Development's great. New housing developments are great. Business development, all good for the economy and good for the Piedmont, but we just want to make sure there are those places to hike and bike and fish and connect with nature. Make sure those kind of places have a place in the development that's happening.
Set the scene for us, Greg. What's a land jam like?
Land jam's a lot of fun. It's our big kind of annual party and benefit. We raise some funds, we raise some friends, and we just have a good time. It's our seventh one this year, and Sierra Hull's going to kick things off, and she's such a talent, just fantastic mandolin player. But then our headliner this year is Dave Grisman, the Dave Grisman Bluegrass Experience, and he is such a talent. I tell you, as I've been out in the community talking to people about Grisman coming, people just freak out. He has such a rabid group of followers. And something I learned in all this, if you're a public radio listener, which I know you are, you hear a Dave Grisman song every week right here on WFDD. If you ever tune into
what?
Car, yeah, that's right. The theme from Car Talk that we all know with the great little bluegrass riff, that is, I think the title is Doggy Mountain Breakdown, but it's written and performed by Dave Grisman.
All right. Bringing it on home. Well, Greg Keener, thank you so much for talking with me today.
My pleasure. It's good to be here. We love having another partnership with WFDD and appreciate everything you all do for the community.
Piedmont Land Conservancy Development Director Greg Keener. Land Jam is Friday, October 16th in Greensboro, and you'll find more details on our website, wfdd.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Back in 60 seconds with a live studio session with Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. I'm Eddie Garcia, and you're listening to Triad Arts Weekend. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm Eddie Garcia. Doug Davis is one of, if not the, hardest working musicians in the Triad. He's got multiple music and recording projects and a full calendar of gigs. But it's his work with his band, The Solid Citizens, that's the most personal for Doug.
I wish you could see you beneath these ragged stars. Cause you don't even seem to understand.
The new EP is called When the Lilies Bloom, and its release is being celebrated at the Garage in downtown Winston-Salem on Friday, October 23rd, with support from Royal House and Ronnie Levels and his Genius Band. Back in 2013, Doug and the band stopped by WFDD Studios for a live session and interview with David Ford.
You know, I guess every songwriter's got their percentage, but I feel like I've got to write 40 or 50 songs before I get a handful of good ones, so I figured rather than belaboring the process for another couple of years, let's kind of put things together as sort of a work in progress, you know. So this is the first six songs we recorded. We've got a bunch of others in the can and in the process.
I talk to a lot of singer-songwriters, but you're, in addition to singer-songwriter, performer, producer, do you go about crafting songs any differently with your producer hat on, or how do you go back and forth between the two?
Well, I think, you know, everything that I'm involved in, every artist that I work with, everybody I produce, everybody I play with, it all sort of leaks into this eventually, you know. And I guess especially when I'm working on an album, I think in terms of crafting an album that works as a whole, you know, that tells a whole story. And we will eventually put out a full-length album that will cull material from the EPs.
Started to fall not too long ago. When the lilies start to bloom, are they handsome, bright and blue? Have they already gone? Aren't the queen and the ball such a lovely sight? When a spring air falls, tell me you love me after all. When the winter fades, tell me again those plans we made at the June parade. At the June parade. promise you could keep. The bitter price, it was too steep. On a cold, cold day, Upton walked away. Wish that you'd stay. Winter, spring, and fall. Tell me you love me after all. When the winter fades, tell me again those plans we made at the June parade. At the June parade. Yeah.
That was Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens here live in Studio A for us. All the plans we made at the June parade. For me, a great song. There are going to be those moments where all I could hear, even if I just heard like that, and the rhythm of the, it would just sound great. Talk about the sounds of words when you're writing, and I know you love storytelling and great literature, but what the sounds of words, what they mean to you, and how you put together a line like that.
You know, a long time ago when I started out songwriting, as an English major, I tried to be as clever and as esoteric and as difficult as I could possibly be. And actually, this band, when we started doing this material, it was a new kind of songwriting for me. I decided that I would try to challenge myself to be more direct and more lyrical and tell narrative stories. And it's been a really difficult process, but I've really enjoyed it. Every once in a while, I get a little bit esoteric.
What's tough about it?
Talk about the anxiety of influence and dealing with cliche and being able to say something directly that hasn't quite been said before. You know, you can't say the same things over and over again, but to try to tell a story in a new way and yet still try to be direct, open, and something that can resonate with a listener. You know, it's hard to avoid cliche. You talk about the A's and parade and moon and June and that sort of thing. And it can be a difficult thing to say something in a way that's simple and resonates and yet hasn't quite been said before.
Well, how's our soundtrack working today, Doug? What's next? This is from the new EP, A Pageant of Gold, and this is Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. Doug, what you gonna hit us with next?
This is called The Great Deluge.
The Great Deluge, live in Studio A. We'll hear Ken Moen on bass, drummer Dan DeNoyers, and guitarist Lee Terry.
Never found a way to break the news.
Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. We've been listening to a session he did with us back in 2013, but you have a chance to hear what he's been up to lately on October 23rd at the Garage. It's a release party for the new EP, When the Lilies Bloom. For info on tickets and more, visit WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Triad Arts Weekend's executive producer is David Ford. Our associate producer is Bethany Chafin, and our contributing editor is Kike Rodriguez-Pastor. You'll find podcasts, archived episodes, and links to our guests, events, videos, and more on our website, WFDD.org. Once you're there, click on Triad Arts Weekend. You can follow us on Twitter as well. Our handle is Triad Arts Speak. And be sure to like WFDD on Facebook. Triad Arts Weekend is a production of 88.5 WFDD, public radio for the Piedmont. I'm Eddie Garcia. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.